Joining us now for more on this is Kathleen Hall Jamison, director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. First of all, good morning to you.
Good morning.
You know, this is a really interesting debate, and I'm wondering if what's going on in Washington about health care now relates to the fact that this is really a debate about what is the appropriate role of government in something as important to everybody as health care, and it's also the most ambitious change in policy that the government has even attempted in quite some time. Would you say that's why the rhetoric is the way it is?
The rhetoric is the way it is, in part for those reasons, and that's the reason that the Obama representatives are framing this as a public option as opposed to a government-run program, and why opponents are calling it government takeover and socialized medicine. If you focus on the nature of the government role here, it becomes more difficult for the rhetoric to focus on the Obama objective: slow down the cost curve, be deficit neutral in 10 years, and then ultimately expand coverage.
So is this debate a useful sort of linguistic exercise, as, you know, it's a health care plan? No, it's a health insurance reform plan. Or, help us to understand the way the language works, how close, you know, or if there's any evidence that they're making progress toward real reform.
If you look at the news coverage as your indicator of what's getting through to the public, what you see is that the Obama administration and the press coverage are both focused now on cost control more so than increasing coverage, and on how you pay for it rather than what you would receive if this happened, what would be good about this for you. And the focus on cost control, slowing the cost curve for the Obama administration, makes strategic sense if by doing so he communicates, and bill advocates communicate, that the individual with insurance is going to be benefited by this plan and not simply being asked to pay for it in some form at some level.
So that's fascinating.
In order to provide insurance for others.
You're saying that if we've advanced to the idea of price tag, we've already leapfrogged over some really much more difficult issues.
We've also leapfrogged over some of the parts of the debate that could be so complex that a reasonable person isn't going to understand them. When you start to talk about insurance exchanges and independent Medicare advisory councils, you're now in a realm in which the language is new, unfamiliar, and as a result, extremely confusing. But when somebody says, well, don't worry, we're going to be taxing Cadillac gold-plated plans, first you step back and say, that doesn't sound like it's mine. But secondly, you're now back into an English language exchange, but one in which one side benefits dramatically. Some people who might be taxed under this proposal might not call their policies Cadillac gold-plated or Goldman Sachs plans.
Who's doing better, do you think, in this debate, the advocates for reform or the people who are calling it an out-of-control stampede?
At the moment, the group that's doing the best, or the organization doing the best, is the Congressional Budget Office. Because we have an environment in which when each side offers an argument, there's still a place that one can go to find evidence that neither side strongly attempts to discredit. And when the Congressional Budget Office, focusing on cost, said first that the Obama plan wasn't going to be decreasing the deficit or even deficit neutral, it might in fact add to it, and then secondly, that the second mechanism the Obama administration had talked about, independent Medicare Advisory Council, wasn't really going to produce particularly great savings in the short term. That agency stood up, entered the debate, and both sides acknowledged that it offered real evidence, and it advanced the debate forward. When the Congressional Budget Office first focused on the problem with the deficit and the plans moving forward, the Obama administration responded by saying, well, they hadn't scored the Independent Medicare Advisory Council. They couldn't because it wasn't before it. When it was put before it, it advanced the debate one more step by saying, yes, but only $2 billion in the first 4 years. That's not enough to accomplish what the Obama administration expects.
So what you're seeing here is government being held accountable. At least the CBO makes a claim, and then officials, legislators respond by changing the policy implications.
And that's the way you'd like the system to work.
It's a good thing.
It's actually an example of democracy in action. In most debates about legislation, about political policy proposals, one side offers one set of facts, the other offers the other. The press doesn't know exactly where to go and begins to try to find experts, and nobody goes to common ground. CBO has provided common ground.
Well, that's interesting. You know, we don't have time to talk about it. Next time we have you on the show, we got to ask you about the term rescission. You've heard that in this discussion, right?
Yes.
Nobody knows what it is. It's not really in the headlines. Fascinating piece on This American Life over the weekend on rescission and the debate over rescission in the healthcare debate. We'll talk about that next time with Kathleen Hall Jamison, director of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks so much, Kathleen.
You're welcome.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.